Welcome to the opening of the exhibition Women in Limnology. This is an event jointly organized by the research training group R3 in cooperation with the Gender Equal Opportunity Office of the University of Konstanz. The exhibition was created by the gender group of the Iberian Association of Limnology. And we'll hear more about the exhibition later. The Impro Theater Konstanz is providing us with a supporting program around this opening, and I think they will start now with their first act.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Hi, hello.
Hi, everybody. Don't be shy. Hello.
We are Impro Theater Konstanz, and we're going to accompany this event with a little bit of improvised theater. And I really like it's how it's the same as in our theater. Mostly the first row is empty. It seems to be the same in academics. We have four wonderful spots in the first row. And the woman does this, and I promise you that people in the first row are safe. Yes, okay, we have four. Who has ever seen improv before? By a round of applause. Who has never seen improv before? And who doesn't?
I do it myself.
You want to introduce yourself?
No, I do improv theater myself.
Oh, okay. Oh. Wow. And we have a first row. Yeah. Cool. We are going to do some improvised scenes, and for that we need a very awake audience. So I have a little thing for you, which is about failing, because I think in science this is important too. Nobody likes it, but we need to fail sometimes to achieve things. And at the same time, it's about being focused, which I think is very important in science too. So very simple task. I have two hands. If I cross them, you clap once. Okay? I think this is doable? Yeah? Okay. Very good. Only. I'm not sure if you understood. Only if I clap. Okay? Okay, let's try again.
It was me.
Yeah. I did it. Okay.
So much stress.
Yeah.
In 1 minute. Okay. So it can be hard and stressful for women, I've heard, in science. Is that the case? Any females here who have been stressed in scientific context? Anyone? Nobody? Perfect.
That was easy. I see a shy.
So it seems like there is sometimes an invisible handicap that some of us have to carry, which others don't.
We're going to see a first scene, and we're going to go back in time in the last century. And Nicole and me, we're going to play one character, and we've given ourselves a little handicap. You are going to play the male. And let's put it. Wow! Yeah. Let's put it in a aquatic science context. Like we would be researching something. What could that be?
Water fleas.
Water fleas. We are experts in that.
Of course, yeah, we are.
So let's go into a little historic back in time. How were water fleas researched in the last century? Enjoy. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm fine, thank you. Can I have a coffee?
Yes, of course.
The fleas are jumping fine today.
Do you like it with milk and sugar?
Sugar pie, you know how I like my coffee, don't you?
My dear professor, yes, my self is very...
I don't have all time, all day, please.
For you.
Thank you.
So, what do you know about water, please?
I happen to know everything about water fleas that is known to mankind so far because I'm the first person to ever spend time counting the jumps of these beautiful animals.
But I was absolutely involved with this stuff.
Yes, and I really appreciate your work in the background because I can say it here because no one's around, right? You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you very much. Look, yeah. I have some results from my research about the flies. What do you...
What do you mean, your research?
Well, I think I'm part... bit.
Pardon me?
I did some research.
Oh, that is so good! Let me take a look at that. Ah! Ah! You counted the jumps.
Yes. What do you think about it?
You have a very beautiful handwriting.
It's...
You should write more poems.
It's obvious that your research was a bit, excuse me, unprecise, I would say.
Just because your numbers are saying they only jump during the daytime and I only measured during the daytime, that doesn't mean that my research is biased. Do you understand? Is that in your tiny head? In your tiny head?
Stop! Okay. Thank you very much for your honesty. Do you want to take more coffee?
Your work here is very important and appreciated. But don't strive for more than what is healthy and good for you.
But
we take care of you here.
Why?
We don't want your pretty heads to explode. Huh?
Hush, hush. 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 But one day I will be better. And then I will be the main
coffee machine.
Yes. Maybe one day you will be the main coffee machine of the entire academic circus here. Thank you, so far. Oh, so cute. See ya.
And scene.
This is the sign for the scene is over. What lovely times.
So yeah, the biggest goal you could achieve is to be the main coffee machine. I hope this changed a little bit within the last century, and we're going to hear our first speaker now. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to welcome our first speaker. It's Professor Weick. She is physics professor at the University of Konstanz, working on nanomechanics. She is currently equal opportunity representative in the Faculty of Science. And she will talk about the situation of gender equality at the University of Konstanz. Also about challenges such as gender bias, preventing women to continue their work in science, and about measures of the University of Konstanz to improve the gender equality.
So thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here. this afternoon at this opening. And yes, what I wanted to do is to talk about gender bias in the natural sciences in general, and also about our current situation here at the University of Constance. And it's beautiful, I think, because I chose to start this review about 100 years ago, and we just saw the situation in those days. I have a quotation from Otto von Guericke, who was a pretty famous legal scientist. And he said in 1897, our universities are universities for men. Very clearly, he did not want the universities to be a place for women. And this was the general perception at those days. A couple of years earlier, there was a debate in the German Reichstag where the possibility of ever admitting women was for the first time mentioned and raised. And it took another 20 years until 1909, until women could study and pursue PhD degrees in all German states. And that is only 110 years ago, which is quite astounding. So what's the situation today? Here I'm comparing two surveys which were done at the University of Constance. I apologize, it's maybe a bit too small for you, but I'll talk you through it. Which were done in the year 2007, that's the light blue data, which is barely visible, and in 2019, which reflects current data. We see the percentage of male and female scientists at different career levels. The squares are the male percentage, the triangles are the female. And you can clearly see that on the student side, the majority has been female for quite some time, 55%, pretty stable since 2007. But a discrepancy starts showing at the PhD student, postdoc, and junior professor level, which grows larger and larger. And at the professor level, even though the situation has improved quite a bit in the past 10, 12 years, the number of female professors is only 26%. Now, this is averaged over all disciplines. We're all natural scientists. So what's the situation in natural sciences? And I have the same survey here for natural science only. For the students, it's about equally distributed. But a gap starts opening for the PhD students, postdocs, junior professors, which grows larger and larger. And for the female professors in the natural sciences, there's only 17%. Again, the situation improved since 2007. So clearly, we've accomplished quite something. We've gone quite some way, but we're not there yet. So what is causing this leaky pipeline? What is causing the women to disappear from science positions? And I guess to cut a long story short, the answer is that there is no simple answer. The complications lurk at every single step in the career, graduate school, postgraduate, early career, rising in the ranks. And it's just not very easy. In order to illustrate that, I'd like to show you this graph illustrating this bright, young, eager female scientist and the hurdles she is facing in her career. It starts with personal things, especially as soon as she decides to have kids. There will be fewer papers, especially fewer first or last author publications. There's scientific aspects to think about. First of all, women tend to cite themselves not as often as their male colleagues do. Less self-citations, they tend to work more interdisciplinary, so there's fewer single authorships on papers, there's a lower H index, and also they don't play power games quite as happily as male colleagues sometimes do. There's also structural aspects. Women tend to adopt part-time positions a lot more often than men do. On average, it turns out that they do more service duty, they do more teaching than male. And all in all, what this adds up to is fewer publications. There's more reasons, I'm just singling out the most striking ones. And finally, there's biases, conscious ones, unconscious ones, let's call it the famous glass ceiling. There's the thing I chose to mention first, we've just seen it so beautifully, the Matilda effect. The woman is doing the research, has some results, and they're ascribed to a male colleague, maybe the male assistant, who is considered to be the competent person in the team. It exists. In my field in physics, Marie Curie and Lise Meitner would be two very beautiful examples. This effect was named after a scientist called Matilda. But yeah, we just saw it. It was here a few minutes ago. Also, women tend to receive less mentoring, less support. So in the end, they're able to acquire fewer or less prestigious grants. And what this adds up in total is that their research is evaluated less worthy, and they're evaluated as less qualified for a faculty position than men, even though they probably are not. So what to do? Should we change the women? No. Here's what happens. This is a math example, but I think you can get the point. This guy screws up. Wow, you suck at math. She screws up. Wow, girls suck at math. That's what we want to overcome. Don't fix the women, fix the structures. And here's what the University of Konstanz is trying to do. We're trying to fix the structures. And I think there's four general concepts we're trying to do. First of all, I mean, we've come quite some ways here at this university. The situation is actually not very bad at all. But we're trying to consolidate the structures that we've done. And we do this by participating in national programs such as the Professorinnenprogramm of the Federal Ministry of Education. Parts of these concepts also went into the third successful proposal of the German Excellence Initiative. And we're kind of trying to make sure these things, our accomplishments, stay. Another task is to make sure our culture becomes and remains excellent and inclusive. To this end, for instance, we published a brochure on gender bias in the sciences, just trying to create some background, some awareness of what is happening and how to maybe prevent this. The third leg is called empowering female researchers. As an example, I would like to mention the Constantia Fellowship, which provides training and mentorship for female scientists at all career levels. And finally, we strive for equal participation in hiring committees, in faculty searches. There's documents how to accomplish that. And so these are the four main pillars of the effort that's going on. With that, I think I don't want to keep you too long from the rest of the program. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of this theater. And well, I'd like to thank you by showing you the last part of this cartoon. Actually, she doesn't suck at math. She knows the solution. Thank you.
So we move on to our next speaker. It's Professor Ulrike Berninger from the University of Salzburg. She is limnologist, university professor in ecology, biodiversity and evolution of animals, and head of the core facility experimental ecology. Professor Berninger will talk about her career path, her experiences as a scientist in aquatic research, and she will provide information on how to assert oneself in the European science system.
Yeah, hello everybody. Thank you very much for having invited me here. I really feel very honored to be able to speak here. I hope I won't overstretch your attention because, yeah, I think I have a lot to say, and I hope it's interesting thing for you. And I was actually very pleased to be able to be given this opportunity. I took part in the Aquatic Women in Women in Aquatic Science workshop for the last couple of days, which I enjoyed tremendously, and which both reassured me that things are changing, that things are happening. At the same time, also made me a little nervous and showed me that, like you were saying, we aren't quite there yet. And it's actually interesting, although the two of us, we did not talk about our presentations before there. You will see there are a lot of similarities, which in itself is a sign that, yeah, the situation, the way we perceive it, is maybe correct. Yeah, I can, of course, not speak for women in limnology or women in aquatic sciences. So, it's a very personal perspective of what the situation of women is and where there are problems, but also where there are maybe pollutions and it's solutions, and it's essentially based on my personal experience and also on my career path. So I started going to university in 1980, which is a long time ago, and at that point, I must admit, certainly looking back on it now, I thought, women in science is a problem. There's no problem. And I was convinced that everybody was just the same. And that's how I was young and I was maybe a little naive and very energetic and everything. So I really could not quite see where there might be problems. Then a lot later, I was actually asked to give, in the context of a workshop, a similar presentation. And at that point, this was in 2010, it was politically a very exciting time too. And I was actually, although I had encountered some issues and problems, I was very positive and very optimistic then. And so this was my main message to my audience then. And then when I dug out that old presentation in order to prepare myself for this presentation here, I was actually a little bit more skeptical. And I think what's the situation, how I feel a little bit now, is also something that's very much in the media actually moment. And I actually like her quote very much, that it is really, it's critical times and we have to be very aware of that. So, but let's try and go through these different stages. And just to give you a little bit of my own background, I just go through my career steps and the important landmarks of my career briefly. I'm, as I said, I'm an aquatic ecologist. I went to university in northern Germany, in Hanover. I actually, what was very forming for my later career was that I did a couple of internships on Helgoland. I then spent a lot of time while I was still a student in a then very famous limnological institute in England, the Freshwater Biological Association, where I also did the practical part of my PhD work, and I completed my PhD at the Free University of Berlin in a very exciting year in 89, which was very cool. And from there I went on as a postdoc to HUI, to the US, and after that was one of the first scientists who had the opportunity working at the then newly founded Max Planck Institute for Marine Microbiology in Bremen. From there I moved to Kiel. So as you can see, I moved around a lot. I just followed the jobs I wanted to work. And then finally, actually, that was my first permanent position, ended at the AWI in Bremerhaven. A personal note aside, since I met my still husband in 1991, so all these stations here, we were together, we got married in 94, but we were commuting because we both wanted to stay in science, we both wanted to work, so for 11 years we lived in different places and tried to keep our relationship going because we gave priority to our career hopes and wishes, so which is something I guess is a very personal decision whether or not you want to do that. However, things changed very drastically in 2002, when I would still say this was the most important thing that happened in my life. We became parents of a wonderful daughter. And at the same time, I actually got a position at the University of Salzburg, and that was the first time we had the opportunity, both my husband and I, Steve Wickham, a lot of you know him anyways, he's a zooplankton ecologist, that we could work in the same place. So that was great, and those 11 years of commuting were over. At the same time, we moved to a very different culture, a very new culture, and all of a sudden we were parents, and we had a small person to take care of. So that changed a lot of things too. In Salzburg, I actually let my actual science slide a little bit for quite a while, because I went very much on this administrative track. I was dean of sciences for a while of our faculty. I was head of the department. I recently dropped a lot of these administrative tasks, and I'm kind of trying to get a little bit back into science again. I'm a member of the Senate now, but I hope to spend the last few years before my retirement to focus a little bit more on science again. However, all these different stations, all these different situations, I think have given me a lot of insight into the situation of scientists in general, but also of women in science, and I want to talk about that a little bit. So I identified three aspects, so to speak, of what are the issues for women in science, maybe, or in natural sciences in general. And so the first question is, was my situation difficult because I was or I'm a woman? Is there a difference to the situation of a man? If so, and obviously yes, what were or maybe still are the problems? And thirdly, are there solutions? And if so, what are the solutions? So I would like to spend a little bit of time going through these three points. So was my situation difficult? Yes, it was in parts, but to a very different degree. And the degree to which I encountered issues or problems or difficulties, I think can be correlated very much to the stage of my career. I don't think it was just my subjective impression that as a student or then young graduate student or young postdoc, I encountered fewer problems. I think at that stage, you are just, I mean, you are more open. People maybe don't take you quite that seriously yet, to be a little polemic. You're not a threat yet. So because you are still very young, you're just a postdoc. So people treat you a little bit more carefully, but there are issues and there are things you have to be aware of. Things did change as I moved up in the scientific or in the career ladder to a point where I was then head of department. Things also changed, I think, because also from my own attitude, because at different stages of the professional situation and also of a different personal situation, you develop different responsibilities and different priorities and different attitudes towards things. So at first, as a graduate student or as a postdoc, my entire responsibility was for myself, for one or maybe two projects. Yes, I had a boyfriend and then husband, but no children, no nothing, a small apartment. So there wasn't really all that much that distracted me from focusing on science and on just having a good time in science. Later, of course, things changed professionally because I wasn't just responsible for myself anymore, but I wanted to form a working group, I wanted to form a department, wanted to leave my footprint at the institutes where I was working, and of course that changed my own attitude, but also the way I was perceived, and that made things a little bit more obvious. And also I was all of a sudden had landed in this reality of combining job and family. It's a very different thing to talk about that theoretically to actually going through that. It's absolutely 150% worth it, but it's not easy, which I think most of you would agree with. The other thing I also want to be, we are natural scientists, so we don't mix too many factors here and we try to do organized experiments. This whole thing was also overlaid by the fact that I switched cultures a lot, and I am now, I would say, in the most conservative of the cultures I've lived in, and that, of course, it happens to coincide with a point where I'm also at the highest stage of my career. So of course, all those things intermingle. I would say when I was in England or the US, at the time in the US, things were a little different, and the whole gender issues, I think they were a lot further than we were, although having talked with colleagues here who live in that system, I see that things maybe haven't changed. I'm perfect there either yet. But as I said, I don't want to. It's difficult to really assign one factor to the issues. It's a mix of all of these. So, but what are these problems? And we already heard about the leaky pipeline. That's a very obvious thing. There's a lot of studies on that show that along a given career path, you lose a lot of people along the way from an undergraduate student to a full professor, but you lose, unfortunately, a lot more women at each of these different steps, and that is caused by their so-called glass ceiling, that we still have this very pronounced pyramid, which you pointed out before. So, but why is that? It's interesting. I also call them hurdles, these things, and I try to differentiate between what I call external and internal hurdles. So the external hurdles, one of the things I think that really has to be said is that the formal issues are becoming fewer. I mean, there are a lot more structures that and a lot more awareness, and things really have improved. There are a lot more places women can turn to. There's a lot more general feeling of equality and everything. So, and there are places we can turn to where we are understood. So that is not so much of an issue anymore. At the same time, there's still these stereotypes of traditional roles, and that is still very ingrained. Some of it is maybe not so consciously shown all the time, but it's still there. And unfortunately, I have to admit, it's also still within women and within the way women act and women think. So that is maybe something we have to work on. One thing I've talked to people about that here during the workshop is still something that's very pronounced, is that the achievements of men and women are perceived totally differently. If you talk about the same thing, it's interpreted in a different way. My classic example is if you start a new professorship in most Germanic university, you give a so-called Einführungsvorlesung, so where you introduce yourself and you talk a little bit about your science, but also a little bit about your personal background. And the classic is that a new male colleague gets up there and tells us how great the science is and how he's deserved this position and everything. And everybody is in awe. And then he says, yeah, and I have a family and my wife moved here with me and we have 5 children. And then everybody goes, wow, what a guy, 5 children. And that's really, really impressive. So then the same thing from a woman, she may also get up there and say, I'm really great and I really deserve this job and I have so many publications. And then she said, yeah, and we just moved here with my family and I have a child. And you can see people thinking, wait a minute, she has a child and she has this position, how does she do that? And is she really such a good scientist? No, she must be a bad mother. So this, I mean, of course, this is a little too much, but I think you all know what's going on, and that really, that does happen, and we have to be aware of that. Hierarchy is still a very big issue, and women in top position, that's still something that not everywhere. As I said, I don't want to be polemic, and I don't want to be misinterpreted, but it's there, and it's still viewed a little suspiciously. What I find most annoying is that a lot of it isn't so open anymore, but there's very often this subtle, condescending behavior. I mean, the classic is you're in a meeting, and the arguments go back and forth and back and forth, and you say something and nobody reacts, and then a male colleague, unfortunately that really does happen a lot, says the exact same thing. He just words it slightly differently. And the next speaker says, yeah, like Mr. Da-da-da or Dr. Da-da-da just said this is, and you sit there and say, excuse me, didn't I just say the same thing? But it just, and there's so many examples for that. And again, it's something we have to be aware of. Maybe just pipe up then, say, excuse me, I said that before. And I think we feel stupid doing that, but maybe we should. A logistic issue is professional time management. Again, we've talked about that in the course of this workshop here. When I was dean and head of the department, I tried to be very careful to not start any important meetings after 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because it's not just for women. I mean, most men who have families, or even if they don't have families, just interest outside work. I think everybody should be allowed to go home between 5 and 6. And this, it's just so common still to start important meetings at 5 or 6. There's always a justification for, yeah, there's no teaching at that point. And so, no, that is not good. This is not what we want, and we have to make sure this is not happening. This is something that applies to men and women equally, of course, that I think we are in a situation where an 8-hour day and a 40-hour work is maybe not enough to reach our scientific goals. But I think that means there's not something wrong with us, but there's maybe something wrong with the whole world. And I think, I mean, yeah, I mean, my husband always says we can take as much vacation as we want to, as long as we work 60 hours a week. And with, yeah, it's a little bit like that. Again, it's something to be aware of. And then there's the whole issue of childcare, of course, which overlays this if that is a situation you are in. There are also internal, back to the stereotypes. Actually, I Googled a little bit to see whether I was on the wrong track or whether I was still a little too narrow-minded. So I Googled in the English words, which are not gender biased, professor, and clicked on pictures on, and this is just the first page that came up. And for professor, the stereotype, of course, is a guy, and there's two women. One of them happens to be Mary Poppins. Interesting. So I thought, this is really interesting. So then I thought, no, let's Google limnologist. Let's see what's going to happen there. Looks a little bit better, and actually scientist was quite a bit better at the same time. I mean, these are a lot of very, they're not real scientific pictures, but just, I mean, maybe this is a real trend that in our stereotypical perception things have changed, but yeah, it is, it's there, and it is something to be aware of. So how about internal hurdles? They are there. They are maybe just as important, if not more. I think we have a tendency, both men and women, to accept these stereotypes, and we have to work on that. I think that's very important. What I find very interesting is that I see in women a lot more willingness to accept stereotypes, but also to make choices. I have as one actually of quite a few women at my university. I have very often I have students come into my office at the later stage of their university course, and they say, oh, I don't know where to go and what to do and everything. And you know what? What shall I do? Family, profession, family. 99%, actually, I can probably say 100% of the students who come to my office with that question are women. I've not met a male student who comes to my office and says, you know what, I really don't know, shall I pursue a career in science or shall I have children? I mean, I realize that kind of. So that's interesting, but that's something we as women can't just blame society or the world for. We have to look at ourselves, and we have to learn to ask ourselves, should we really make these choices? And my answer always is, you do not have to make choices. I'll come to that later, but it's, you can do it all. Anyway, I think that's a very important thing. It's kind of linked with this fear of multitasking, which obviously men to a certain degree also have, but I think with women it's very pronounced. Which another thing is, I find a higher acceptance of hierarchy, which is maybe something we can discuss. Also, women, I don't know, I don't want to sound too polemic, but I think women often have a higher need for a stable social situation, stable network, social network, which has often to do with the children, to want to give children that. And that, of course, then sometimes makes it more difficult to really push for a career, to move around and that kind of stuff. And I think we would all agree, which is not good, yeah, I say it, is that we are tend to be a little bit more self-critical and maybe too self-critical. One thing you also said in your presentation, and that's something I find very pronounced and I see in myself, is that I really think women are less prepared to play these stupid power plays. I remember I was in a meeting once when my daughter was really little, and it was ridiculous. They were fighting about stuff that really made no sense, and it was a complete waste of time. And I was so annoyed, and I was under pressure because I had to go and pick up my daughter. And I was so furious, which I paid for afterwards. So I just jumped up and marched to the door and opened the door. And before I left the room, I turned around and said, you know what? I at least have the luxury to go to a real kindergarten now. So maybe in retrospect, I would admit, maybe that wasn't all that clever. As I said, I paid for it, but it needed to come out, and I felt very strongly about it at the time. So it's a little pronounced, but it's, yeah. And yeah, as I said, I think we have different priorities often and a different concept of what means power, what means leading. So I think that's very important. So are there solutions? I think there's no reason to become hysterical or polemic. I think at the same time, it's very, very important to not deny the situation. Again, we were talking about that in the context of the workshop a little bit, that I actually often find myself in conversation with young or younger women in the field, and I mention these issues, and they kind of give me this eye rolling, say, come on, you old feminists, or for us things have changed completely, it's not an issue anymore. I'd be very happy to accept and to say things have changed and things have improved massively, but it's still there, and it's very, very important to be aware of it and to only, I mean, again, we're scientists, we know only what we are aware of we can actually do something about. So why we don't want to overdo it, we don't want to be polemic, we don't want to be hysterical, we also don't want to deny the situation. Are there role models? A couple of weeks ago I met some very good friends who are also women, who are also working in the science, and we ended up saying, Antje Boetius have that we don't have? Do you probably know Antje Boetius, everybody loves her. So what does Nancy have? What does Angie have? What does Annalena have? So it's difficult. And for me, these are role models, but they are not necessarily women I want to copy, and I don't necessarily want their lives. But at the same time, I think it's great to see that they are really, really strong-willed, powerful women who are at the same time approachable and women we can, to a certain degree, relate to. So what do they have that we don't have, apart from competence and flexibility and everything? That I think that goes without saying. I think they have an amazing amount of drive, and they have no fear, and they have a very clear list of priorities. So this is something that's important, but that may not apply to all of us, and not all of us women or men for that matter, will be able to really use that to become like them, which we don't really want to. At the same time, I think there are a lot of issues or little things where we can turn the wheels and where we can do something. As I said before, be aware of the situation and be prepared. Also be literally prepared. Go into meetings better prepared than your colleagues, because you come across more competent, and you are more competent then, and it's a lot easier to show that, and it's a lot less difficult to be brushed away. Be confident and authoritative. It's not that easy, but it's something we have to work on. And don't always try to, when you have somebody who challenges you or criticizes you, don't always feel you have to defend yourself. Just say, this is my opinion, this is what I did, period. We can maybe talk about it later if you disagree. Don't let people push you onto this emotional level. I mean, that happens very easily. The kindergarten thing maybe was a tad over emotionally, I would admit that. But often, even when you're not, you're immediately put into, or very easily put into, this emotional draw, which is unjustified, and don't let people get away with that. At the same time, I think a lot of us, probably women, or definitely men too, want to be empathetic, and that's important. So don't confuse the two. You can be empathetic without being overly emotional. Don't be bullied into choosing if you don't want to choose. If you want to choose, fine, choose. Do whatever you want to, but don't feel you are the one who has to make the choices. Try it out. It works. I mean, my example always is, I'm always stressed and have too little time for everything, but I think if I was only a mother or only a scientist, I'm not sure I would really feel totally differently. I would just, my entire energy would still be used up. So, yeah. Pick your fights carefully. Don't feel you have to, I mean, that doesn't just apply to women, but don't feel you have to react to everything. And there are fights that are not winnable. Ignore those and don't feel bad about that. Just think about where do you have chances of really getting somewhere. Network. Thanks a lot to you guys. This was really great. It's very, very important. Accept responsibilities, don't shy away from that, but also be prepared to say no. The classic in a meeting, who's going to take the protocol? Don't do it. it's actually, and insist on acceptable time management. I really think that's very important. So, another couple of, the internal, those were the external, the internal hurdles. Don't build unrealistic images of yourself or of others. That's not fruitful and doesn't get anybody anywhere, but it's difficult sometimes. Use your competences, but also use your flexibility constructively. I remember when my daughter was little, because I have such flexible working hours, as long as I worked 60 hours a week, I could go to every school event, every kindergarten event, unless I had a big meeting or teaching or so. And I'm sure the other mothers mostly there always say, she's not really working, is she? So it's nice because I had the flexibility to go there, whereas if I work in a 9-to-5 job, I couldn't have gone there. So there are also advantages in our kind of job. And seek, accept, and accept help and support, that's very important. One little thing I feel very strongly about, although I get mocked mercilessly about that, and I can, the German speaking world, I can give you a few examples later that are actually quite funny, but I actually am a great believer in gender correct languages. There's so many studies that really show that it does affect people's way of thinking, and as I said, I have a daughter, and she's very proud of me, but she also gets tired of me sometimes, as daughters do, and she thinks it's kind of important, but also funny with my fixation on gender correct language. So she sent me this postcard a little while ago, which is maybe a little over. I can explain it to the English speakers later, but also it's not gender correct, just gender correct languages. It's also actually use of language, and that leads me over to the exhibition, which I haven't really seen yet, but I read the introduction to it, and there was actually the first sentence, or one of the first sentences, that struck me, because it introduces the women portrayed here as passionate and fascinating women. So that's actually quite interesting. I mean, personally, okay, if somebody describes me as passionate and fascinating, I would probably be quite flattered. At the same time, if this was an exhibition on the achievements of men in limnology, would they be described as passionate and fascinating? No, what did we say on the bus today?
Brilliant
and creative, that would be it. So it's a subtle difference. But it's an important difference. So, to sum it up, what have we learned? Maybe in 1980 I was a little too naive, so maybe there were problems after all. I think I was right with my optimism about 10 years ago, and now I'm still very optimistic. I think we are on the right path, but we have to be careful and we have to continue keeping a very close look and a very close eye on the situation in order to help making it better all the time. thank you very much for your attention, and I'd be more than happy to talk to anybody about anything I brought up here. So
our next speaker is Dr. Arnold Del Arco. She is scientist at the Limnological Institute in Konstanz, working in the group of aquatic ecology and evolutionary biology. She co-authored the paper Women in Limnology in the Iberian Peninsula, Biases, Barriers and Recommendations. Dr. Arco will now give us an introduction, a deeper introduction.
So I won't give you a presentation. I will do a short introduction to the Women in Limnology exhibition. And I'm very happy to do it because I'm part also of this association. This is the Iberian Association of Limnology. The exhibition was presented for the first time in Coimbra in the previous meeting in Portugal. And it's been traveling around Europe now. I think this is the fourth time it has been exposed. So I really recommend you to join the exhibition later. The Iberian Association of Limnology is an association of Spanish and Portuguese researchers that are limnologists, and they study beautiful water bodies of the Lake of Constance. I won't give you any names of who is leading the association right now because I really believe in the importance of the community over the individuals. Nevertheless, I really recommend you to go to the next meeting for the limnologists that we have in the audience that will be in Murcia in Spain next year, because the individual composing this community are great scientists, and I have enjoyed all the meetings I have been before in there. The discussion is great, and it's a very nice environment to present your work. So the association is a small association, as I said, from Spanish and Portuguese limnologists. It's composed of 500 people, and half of them are young researchers. These young researchers are the ones that have created this exhibition. They are brilliant and creative and passionate young scientists that organize many different kinds of activities. One of them is the exhibition, among other are like courses for the young researchers just starting at doctoral level, for statistic analysis, to improve the skill for outreach. And they also organize different working groups to discuss different topics of interest, and this was the gender bias. That's how this exhibition started. And this group of young researchers includes doctoral and postdoctoral researchers. Now, that I said, they do these different kind of activities to increase the cooperation between the limnologists in this association. When I look at the audience, I don't classify you based on gender. I classify you based on the diversity I see, in the complexity I see, because I think we are all diverse and equal human beings. So that's the society I hope we will achieve. And this concern of dividing the society with these very simple labels was the concern that actually motivated this working group to create this exhibition, to analyze and understand what were the biases that didn't allow this equality to be possible. In science, nowadays we still see that we have to break many barriers. This young researchers group thought that it would be very important to understand better your own and closer community, so that's why they did this study of people that are part of the association that resulted in a paper that is called Women in Limnology in the Iberian Peninsula, the Bias, the Barrier, and Recommendation. They mainly talk the same issues that have been presented in the previous talk, and I just want to highlight two of the main negative biases that they spot, even though I want to say much because you will see it later on the exhibition. But the two main problematics are when it comes to recruitment, because women don't reach the higher position or the leading position. And another issue that they spot is the visibility in conferences, what will be also very important to make it easier to go into higher positions. I think we have to change woman, men behavior, but I think we shouldn't go into the path of reproducing alpha behaviors. We should make it possible to, we should make paths that bring us to success in a different way. It doesn't have to be the same role that we have until today. Now, just a couple of words about the exhibition. I really invite you to join us to see it because it will be a travel around the world. You will see, you will meet researchers, women in lignology from different countries, the ones that broke the first barriers that make our way much easier today for us to be lignologists. Therefore, you will go through a timeline globally that will focus on the first lignologists around the world, and then it will focus on the Spanish and Portuguese lignologists that have a huge impact for the development of this science in the peninsula. You will also see the finding of the paper I have mentioned before, and they explain the glass ceiling effect within the society, that is also like a phenomenon that has been presented before. And just in short, even though it has been explained, it's like why there are many women have the early career stages, but they don't make it through to the senior and leader position. This was the short introduction I wanted to do to the exhibition. Thank you for coming, and I hope you really join later for to see the exhibition and understand better how this Spanish society works and what are the findings of the paper. Thanks.